Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, The Appearance of Shukadeva Goswami, Text Number 36. Anyata te vyakta gatir darshanam na katam rinam nitaram riyamananam samsidasya vaniyasa anyata te vyakta gatir darshanam na katam rinam nitaram riyamananam samsidasya vaniyasa anyata otherwise te your avyakta gate of one whose movements are invisible darshanam meeting na for us katam how nrinam of the people nitaram specifically mriyamananam of those who are about to die samsidasya of one who is all perfect Vaniyasa, voluntary appearance. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here? Though you are moving incognito to the common man and not visible to us who are on the verge of death. So what did I just read? For the Jaivadra. Pretty good. Anyone else? Chose the right person. Yeah, that's good. I'll read it again. Otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here? So, two things are said here. That who are we talking about? Yeah, Shukadeva Goswami. So he voluntarily appeared there, being inspired by Lord Krishna. So in one sense, Krishna told him to go, but he voluntarily went. Krishna could have said go, and he said, well, I don't really feel like it. So that's the voluntary, is that you agreed to do what Krishna inspires you to do. Though you are moving incognito to the common man, and not visible to us who are on the verge of death. So why is he not visible to those who are on the verge of death? Yes. Yeah. Well, something like that. Generally, everyone is on the verge of death, we'll find out. That each one of us are actually on the verge of death, but according to our level of consciousness, we're generally not perceptive of persons who are actually, if our consciousness is not devotional, we won't be able to appreciate persons who are self-realized or representatives of Krishna. Therefore, they become invisible, just like Krishna is invisible. Krishna may appear as the deity, but most persons will take the deity as stone. Arche, Shila, Vishnu, Arche, Shila, Vishnu, Dhir, Naramati, Guru, Narake, Vaishnave, Narake, what was that? Narakabuddhi. So, although we may see the deity, but we may not take the deity as Krishna. We may take it as stone or something else. So, similarly, a person who is a devotee, just like Shukadeva Goswami, he was walking on the street, but most people didn't take him as very important. He was walking as an avaduta, naked, and so people, especially it says the women and the children, were running after him and mocking him or throwing dust on him, whatever. only when he came before the sages and all the sages stood up and offered him respect, then all the other common people, they realized that this is not a common person like us, and they all disappeared. Purport. The great sage Sukadeva Goswami was certainly inspired by Lord Krishna to appear voluntarily before Maharaj Parikshit, the great devotee of the Lord, just to give him the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can achieve the nucleus of the devotional service of the Lord by the mercy of the spiritual master and the personality of Godhead. The spiritual master is the manifested representative of the Lord to help one achieve ultimate success. One who is not authorized by the Lord cannot become a spiritual master. Srila Sukadeva Goswami is an authorized spiritual master, and thus he was inspired by the Lord to appear before Maharaj Parikshit and instruct him in the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can achieve the ultimate success of going back to Godhead if he is favored by the Lord sending his true representative. As soon as the true representative of the Lord is met by a devotee of the devotee is assured and guaranteed for going back to Godhead just after leaving the present body. This, however, depends on the sincerity of the devotee himself. The Lord is seated in the heart of all living beings, and thus he knows very well the movements of all individual persons. As soon as the Lord finds that a particular soul is very eager to go back to Godhead, the Lord at once sends his bona fide representative. The sincere devotee is thus assured by the Lord of going back to Godhead. The conclusion is that to get the assistance and help of a bona fide spiritual master means to receive the direct help of the Lord himself. Anita te vikta gate darshanam nakatam rinam nitaram riyamananam samsidasya viniyasa. Otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here, though you are moving incognito to the common man and are not visible to us who are on the verge of death? Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvishesha Shunmivadi Pasika Dhyade Siddharne. So what does it mean that one who is not authorized by the Lord cannot become a spiritual master? Sukadeva Goswami is an authorized spiritual master, and thus he was inspired by the Lord to appear before Maharaj Parikshit and instruct him in the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. So how do we know if someone is authorized? Just like in the material world, if you're an authorized, say, lawyer, how do we know if someone's an authorized lawyer? What's that?
He's registered.
He's registered. Yeah, that's somewhat authorized. That's part of the authorization process. But here's, a lot of time we use the word authorized. Yeah, of course, he must know the law. How do we know if someone is an authorized spiritual master? Yes.
Recognized by
the Wait, raise your hands. Everyone else is raising. Yes.
Yes, a diploma, graduation diploma.
An authorized spiritual master has a diploma.
Oh.
Well, we're talking about a spiritual master now. Yes.
Recognized by the devotees.
By the devotees. How do you know who a devotee is?
Authorities.
Which authorities? He's authorized by those who are authorized. That's... yes.
Through the scriptures?
Through the scriptures. How do you know if the scriptures authorize him? What do you mean by through the scripture? What do you mean by that? Oh, now, instead of scriptures, you're using the word shastra. What does that mean? What's the difference between shastra and scriptures? What does it mean he's authorized by the shastra? You don't know? What did you say that you don't? Can you explain what you just said? No. Okay. Yes.
I was thinking, Dr. Urian's idea must be that the spiritual master is described, qualities are described in Shastra.
Okay.
By a person who displays such qualities, we can recognize the spiritual master.
Why?
Because we accept the Shastra as a revelation of the Supreme.
Okay. Yes.
discovered from Sufic succession.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Yes.
And also we preach according to Shastra.
Only preach?
We are speaking and behaving according to Shastra. That's
the reason. Okay, so we're saying that basically we have to see things through the Shastra and then he becomes authorized. Yes.
An authorized student of the master, he decides the next authorized student of the master. So he gives the to be guru.
No, that's not true. How is it? That's not necessary. So he, Prabhupada, for instance, he authorized everyone to become guru. If you follow, you become authorized as soon as you follow the authorized spiritual master. Everyone is, he wanted all his students to be authorized. Prabhupada said that when he was asked in November 77, who will be the next leader, Prabhupada said, anyone who follows, they'll be the next leader. Now, the other way is to rubber stamp. I rubber stamp you, and even though you don't understand the philosophy and you don't follow it, but you're rubber stamped as some title, and therefore you're so-called the next acharya. But really the acharya is one who actually represents Krishna. So this is a topic that's not, it's one of the achintya topics. Because then if we look through Shastra, who looks through Shastra? Just like if the spiritual master is authorized because we see through the Shastra that he's authorized, but does that mean that he's authorized because I look through the Shastra? I may look through the Shastra and see that Bhakti so-and-so is authorized to deliver Krishna because that's the way I see it. But does that make someone authorized? Yeah, in one sense it does, because from ultimately Krishna knows who's authorized or not, but we're not Krishna. But we can find out, we can understand through Krishna that he says what's authorized. Basically what's authorized, Krishna describes very simply, that they repeat the same message that he did, that he has, or he is, and that they're following Krishna's instructions themselves. That's the authorization. Because, well, one thing in our philosophy is that ultimately Krishna is the doer of everything. Only a person who's in illusion thinks himself to be the doer. Isn't that right? Prakrite kriyamanane, kriyamanani, gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes of nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are actually carried out by the three modes. So I may think I'm moving my hand now, but actually, am I really moving the hand? In other words, I feel myself that I'm a living entity, I'm conscious, and then I'm moving, something's moving the hand. But actually there's a difference between myself, who I'm talking, and actually the hand moving. Naiva kinchit kromiti yuktamanite tatvavit. So one who's tatvavit, one who's actually knowledge of the absolute truth, he knows that although he seems to be, he's seeing, he's hearing, he's smelling, he's breathing, he's moving about, he always knows within himself that he does nothing at all. Because while evacuating and receiving and opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. So though we're certainly conscious of this body and everything that we're doing within the body, but at least we should understand that I'm aloof from everything that's going on. I'm completely transcendental, and you all are transcendental also. Everyone is transcendental. Although we're perceptive of through our sight and hearing and smelling and touching and also the moving about, we're perceptive of what's going on within this present body that we have, because we're what's called kshetra gya, we're the knower of the field, but we're the we're not the field. We're not the kshetra. We're not the yantra. We're not the body. We're simply the knower. Now, if we examine Vedic evidence, and if we examine our intelligence with our intelligence, then we can also find out, without going through the whole process, in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2:35, it is said, by logic, we can understand these things by use of our intelligence. We can understand how the Supreme Lord, as the Super Soul, is actually doing everything, and we're simply an instrument for Krishna. Instrument for Krishna means that we can agree to serve Krishna, and therefore the body is utilizing Krishna's service, or we can disagree to serve Krishna, and then the body is utilized according to the modes of nature that we're situated. So the living entity simply makes a choice, either to utilize the body in Krishna's service, or to utilize the body in one of the modes of nature, or a combination of them. So the living entity constantly has that choice, whether to utilize its assets in the service of Krishna, or to utilize them in the service of the illusion. And of course, utilizing them in the service of Krishna can also be mixed. It is not necessarily that it's 100%. And the Shastras tell us the symptoms of a body, words, intelligence that's utilized in Krishna's service, and the symptoms of one who's engaged in Maya under the three modes. So these are described within the Shastra. But, so the more we understand Shastra, the more we can understand if someone is actually engaged in Krishna's service, or if one is engaged in the illusory energy. So, Krishna says, Acharya mam bijaniyam navamatita karhichit. Sarva buddhya nasarva martya buddhyeta sarva deva mayoguru. That one should never consider the acharya, one should consider the acharya, acharya van vijaniyam. One should consider the acharya to be my very self. No one should disrespect him because he's said to be the representative of all the demigods. So acharyamam vijaniyam, one should know that the acharya is my very self. So anyone, or here it's specifically talking about, or at least in the purport we can understand, Prabhupada is talking about the Diksha Guru. The Diksha Guru is one who gives the mantra and gives the sambandha to understand what the mantra is. Sambandha is a description of who God is, who we are, what our relationship with God is, and how. And then there's the abhideya, the process by which one can execute in order to realize what the philosophy is. So that's given by the Shiksha Guru. The Sambandha is given by the Diksha Guru, and the abhideya is given by the Shiksha Guru. So then Krishna says, one should know also the Shiksha Guru to be my very self. And then Prabhupada writes in the purport that there are two types of Shiksha Gurus. One is one, objective and subjective. So objective means that the person is actually situated in transcendence and understands everything by self-realization, by personal direct experience. Just like when Maharaj Vidura returned home after visiting the places of pilgrimage, then Maharaj Yudhisthira greeted him with the words, Bhavad Vidas Bhagavatas Tirtham Bhutak Swayam Vibho Tirthi Tirthani Bhutani Swantak Stena Katabhritaha. That saints like yourself are verily places of pilgrimage. He's referring to Maharaj Vidura. Because wherever you go, you turn that place into a place of pilgrimage because you carry the Lord Gadagaja within your heart. So, certainly, if someone is absorbed in thinking of Krishna, then Krishna is personally present there. Because our philosophy is thinking of Krishna means that Krishna is there. There are, for instance, there are different types of deities. There are seven types of deities. Anyone know the seven types of deities? any. Well, we know the deity, for instance, made out of clay, deity painted in the sand, deity painted with painting, deity made out of metal. These are all, and also there's a deity within the mind. So, Krishna, when we think about Krishna to different degrees, he's there according to the intensity and the devotion we're thinking of. Kamsa, for instance, was absorbed in thinking about Krishna, so much so that, personally speaking, he saw Krishna personally everywhere. But because he lacked the devotion, therefore the ecstatic feeling wasn't there. The devotional feeling wasn't there, therefore there was no exchange with Krishna on the emotional platform of Ladini Shakti. On the other hand, if one is thinking about Krishna with feeling and devotion, then Krishna reciprocates with that devotee. And in that reciprocation, the atmosphere becomes transcendental. So similarly, one who's completely self-realized, as Krishna says, Bayas Parashe Vasakdatma Vindat Yatmini Yat Sukham Sabrahma Yoga Yuktatma Sukham Akshayam Ashnute. That such a person is not attracted to material sense enjoyment or external objects, but is situated in, but enjoys the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness because he concentrates on the Supreme. Someone who is actually conscious of Krishna, who remembers his form, his quality, his pastimes, etc., who is actually experiencing the transcendental loving exchange with Krishna, then he's when in his presence, then the whole atmosphere becomes purified because Krishna and his entire transcendental realm are present. So this is Gadagraja. Bhavadvidas Bhagavatas Tirtham Bhutak Swayam Vibho Tirti Tirtani Bhutani Swantak Stena Kataha Brataha. He carries the Lord within himself. Now, on the other hand, Prabhupada's right. Someone may subjectively understand the philosophy and may present it. So although he may not be experiencing it, or they may not be experiencing it to the highest degree, but still they're also subjectively understanding it, and they can give relevant instructions to help people come at least up to the level that they're on. One who's understood that Krishna is God, that we're his eternal servants, we should remember him, we should serve him. One who's understood that to a certain degree, they can certainly instruct others to do that. And they also become Shiksha Guru. And they can engage other people in the service of Krishna. So there are two different ways of understanding. One is by direct experience, the other is by theoretical understanding. With some direct experience also. It's all different degrees. Just like there are different levels of devotional service from Shraddha, to Sadhu Sangha, to Bhajana Kriya, to Narta Navritti, to Nishta, to Ruchi, to Asakti, Bhava, and Prema. So it is not that necessarily to become a guru you have to be on the Prema platform, but Prabhupada writes, the Acharya, in the true sense of the term, who is authorized to deliver Krishna, enriches the disciple with full spiritual knowledge, and thus awakens him to the activities of devotional service. So what will deliver Krishna, ultimately? Radhavala? What's that? The Guru. I'll repeat the passage again. You can see what it says there in the passage. The Acharya, in the true sense of the term, who is authorized to deliver Krishna, enriches the disciple, the devotee, with full spiritual knowledge, and thus awakens him to the activities of devotional service. So what will actually deliver Krishna to the devotee? Yes, the activities of devotional service. What's that? Yeah, because that will completely deliver Krishna. So the Acharya, in the true sense of the term, who is authorized to deliver Krishna, enriches the devotee with full knowledge, spiritual knowledge, and thus awakens him to the activities of devotional service. Of course, even with little knowledge, we can begin the activities of devotional service. So actually, it's the devotional service that delivers the devotees. But we can only engage in devotional service if we have some knowledge. And the more knowledge we have, then the more we'll engage in devotional service. So the acharya, in the true sense of the term, he's expert because he knows how to explain things in such a way as to clarify and encourage people to engage in Krishna's service. So the more one is able to explain things in such a way as that people become, they understand what is the process of devotional service, it becomes clearer, and they become encouraged to perform the activities of devotional service, then he becomes more and more the acharya in the true sense of the term. Our philosophy is quite consistent. That it is not, for instance, that I become initiated and my life is perfect because now I have a guru, he understands the philosophy and he seems to be following it, therefore I've become perfect inexplicably. And if I shout his name enough and I seem to be devoted enough, then automatically Krishna will give me all transcendental knowledge. So, this applies to everyone. But the real fact is, if I understand, if my guru is actually elevated, then he'll explain things to me in such a way, and he'll do his own service in such a way, is that I'll become enlightened and enlivened to do the same thing that he's doing, and therefore get the full mercy of Krishna, or as much mercy of Krishna as he's getting. So that means that everyone, according to how much they can explain the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and to the degree that they're able to enliven others to perform the activities of devotional service, to that degree, they become bona fide gurus. Bona fide, bona, what does bona mean in Latin?
Good. Yes.
And fide?
Something like faith.
What is that?
Something like faith.
Yes. So in good faith. They have good faith in the process of devotional service, and they're genuine. And that, in other words, they're not only following what Krishna says, but they're also explaining what Krishna says. And therefore they become bona fide. They become genuine because they're repeating what Krishna says, and they're following what Krishna says. And here it says, Prabhupada emphasizes that to get the assistance of a bona fide spiritual master means to receive the direct help of the Lord himself. So we may think that the spiritual master is an ordinary person, but if they're actually acting on behalf of Krishna, and they're actually repeating Krishna's message, then it's actually Krishna who's doing it. Now I may be sitting here, you may be sitting there. As a matter of fact, that's what we're doing right now. But am I really the doer? Am I really the person who is speaking? And are you really the person who's hearing? In one sense, yes, we're all hearing. We're all hearing what Krishna has to say. If I'm repeating what Krishna had to say, according to my realization, then I'm acting as Krishna's instrument. And if you're hearing and trying to understand what Krishna had to say, then you're also acting as Krishna's instrument. And the result should be is that we realize that we're Krishna's instruments. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was asking what this is all about. Akyaki me ko bhavan ugarupa. This horrible thing that we're all going through. What is it all about? Why are we all being tortured in the material world and bewilderment, confusion, trying to find some safety and happiness? What is it all about? So Krishna says, it's all about I've come here to torture all of you. To just give a summary. Kalos mi lokashe krit pravrido lokansa maharta miha pravrita. I've come here to kill everyone. So if you're finding yourself in some difficulty and if you're bewildered, then you should understand that this is Krishna's mercy on you. This is what Krishna says. I've come here to torture you all. And if you feel it, then you can understand you're getting the direct mercy of Krishna. Through his material energy, of course. There's different types of material energy. Maya also means mercy. But then Krishna says, Tasmat tvam yutishta yusho yabashva jitva shatrum bhushva rajan sridam mayayavatan yata puravameva nimitra matram bhavasavasachin. So just get up and prepare to fight. So Krishna doesn't say, I'm torturing you all, you're all going to die, just give up. No, he says, now get up to Arjuna and prepare to fight, and after conquering your enemies, you'll enjoy your flourishing kingdom. There you put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savasachin, can be but an instrument in the fight. So the fact is that everything we're working hard, and everyone's working hard in the material world, somehow or another, to sustain what they have and get more. That's a pretty good summary of the material world. Everyone's trying to keep what they have and to get more of whatever they're looking for. And everyone's supposed to be helping each other do that. Get more what they preserve what they have, and everyone's supposed to help me get more of what I lack. And that's called family, friendship, whatever you want to call it. Unfortunately, everyone's going to lose whatever they have, and no one can really gain anything here. It's really depressing, isn't it? When you think about it. Everyone's working hard for nothing, for something that's impossible. It's impossible to keep anything here, and it's impossible to really gain anything substantial. So Krishna says, just be an instrument in this fight. So Krishna's fight is ultimately, as we know, he wanted Arjuna to kill everyone on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. That's part of it. But ultimately his real mission is to enlighten people in Krishna consciousness. He wants to go through the whole battlefield of Kurukshetra because Duryodhana didn't want to enlighten people in Krishna consciousness. He wasn't really a friend of Krishna. Or Arjuna was a friend of Krishna, and therefore Krishna wanted that Yudhisthira Maharaj be reinstated on the throne so that the goal of the Vedic wisdom, which is to surrender to Krishna, could be understood by the people in general. So ultimately, the real fight is to either enlighten people in Krishna consciousness or not. To serve Krishna or not. To utilize one's energies in Krishna or for Krishna or not. So one who's trying to utilize his energies in the service of Krishna, he becomes an instrument for Krishna. And somehow or another, Krishna uses the word savasachin. Savya means left, and savasachin means that Arjuna was able to shoot arrows either with his left or his right hand, which indicates that he was completely absorbed in that particular activity. So to become completely absorbed in service to Krishna means to become an instrument for Krishna, and that means that actually Krishna is directly present in the form of that particular devotee. Not that because he has the title of guru or doesn't have the title of guru, then Krishna is present. Now Krishna is present in proportion to the devotee's actual absorption, both in serving Krishna and in remembering Krishna. So that means that anyone here, if they're engaged in Krishna's service, that they're guru. They're acting as an acharya. According to the degree, will be according to the degree of their sincerity. So here Prabhupada mentions sincerity. Well, so what does sincerity mean?
Wish.
Who's that?
Some devotee explained that when they walk a marble, then they'll crash it. They put wax inside in order to cover over the crash. But then sincere is the Latin word which means without wax.
Yes, sincere. So, any devotee who doesn't have wax maybe it's wax between our ears or something. The wax is so thick I can't really hear anything. Yes, the devotees who don't have wax between their ears. Sincera. And therefore they're able to hear the actual instructions of Krishna and follow them. Because if we don't hear, and why don't we hear? Why don't we hear instructions?
Yeah. That's a major factor. We're stubborn.
Say someone is speaking, why don't we hear?
Yes.
That's true. That's true. Ultimately, Krishna says, because we're envious. Yes.
There's no one to desire to follow me. It comes also from business. And you can think that actually the repetition is perception to not follow me.
The repetition?
Can hear such things as repetition is perfection. So I think that it comes from there that someone doesn't have a great desire to follow, but he thinks that it's enough to repeat, and that's all.
Yeah, there may be many direct reasons, but generally, if someone's speaking, we can't hear from them. I mean, the word envy may have different connotations, but generally, we don't want to serve. That's basically the reason. Now, we may think, I really want to serve Krishna, but I don't really want to serve this devotee. Just like one time, Prabhupada was speaking some in Hawaii, and some of his followers came there and said, Prabhupada, Swamiji, or Prabhupada actually, Prabhupada, we want to serve you, but we don't want to serve these GBCs. So Prabhupada said, my instruction is that you should serve these GBCs. And they said, well, Prabhupada, you know, we really want to serve you, but we just can't serve these GBCs. So Prabhupada said, my instruction is that you should serve these GBCs. And then they said, well, Prabhupada, you know, we really want to serve you, but we just can't serve these GBCs. So Prabhupada slammed his hand on the desk and says, get out of here, you hypocrites. I wish I could do it, but be more dramatic. Because my hand would break or this table would more likely my hand. So the fact is that anyone, if they're actually serving the instructions of Krishna. Now, of course, the point is the devotees may have a good reason. They may have said, well, here is, in retrospect, if they would have served these authorities within our society, they probably would have gotten into trouble. That they weren't genuine authorities. Generally, that's our excuse. And if you go on the internet, you'll find out all the horrors that ever happened to ISKCON. And that will completely convince us to look at all the devotees and say, what's actually lurking in their hearts? We know they look like devotees, but for how long? What is their real reason for asking me to get that glass of water? What lurks behind the corner when I get it? What will they actually be doing with it? So another example comes that there was one authority, a GBC, within our society, and one day he was on the street, and he met this lady. And he came back to the temple, he was a sannyasi at the time, and said that I met Harris, for the Toyota company on the street of New York. Just, you know, maybe it's possible, but. And she came back to the temple, no less, and somehow or another he developed a relationship with her, and Prabhupada even married her. They married the sannyasi with this lady, and the idea was that she was going to give a fortune to the society. Well, to make a long story short, I mean, some anomalies started to happen within the New York temple at that time. She was claiming that this particular devotee was an incarnation of Bhaktisiddhanta, and I don't know who she was, but somehow or another, they discovered chicken in her refrigerator. And eggs and things like things that were being offered with had eggs in them, etc. So finally, there was a scandal, like as usually happens in ISKCON. Give everyone something to talk about. And it was discovered that She wasn't a heiress to the Toyota company, believe it or not. She was something else. And he was removed. So Prabhupada came and visited sometime afterwards, and he complimented the devotees for following, that in spite of all the difficulties, that they kept on with their devotional service and tried to keep the temple together. And then he criticized some of the leaders for following. Because Prabhupada said, I told you to follow, but you shouldn't. I didn't tell you to surrender your intelligence. In other words, ultimately, we're not supposed to surrender our intelligence. We're supposed to understand when Prabhupada said to follow the leaders, that doesn't mean to surrender our intelligence. The leader says, there are only, you know, my desire now is, because I'm the authority, is only three regular principles. And everyone goes, jai! Just the leader I was looking for. And he says, post no meat, fish, and eggs, the three regular principles for now. And we go, wow, so merciful. An ocean of mercy. And everyone goes, jai, jai. This is the merciful person I was looking for. So then we follow and we wind up in hell. We wonder, how did I get here? I followed strictly. This is unfair, the process. I did exactly what I was told. So the point is that the actual authority ultimately is Krishna. We don't make up our... We don't become the authority. We become the authority as much as we've understood what Krishna wants and as much as we follow it. Then we become authorized to become an authority. On the other hand, if we make up our own ideas, then we're not the authority anymore. And how do we know what Krishna wants? Ultimately, it's there within Scripture. Tarko apratishta shutiya vibina nasavari shiri yasyana vinam. Dharma sitat vamni hitam guhayam mahajano yena katastapanda. So we have to choose some mahatma. Everyone's choosing a mahatma. Everyone has their authority, just like everyone's engaged in argument, one way or another. One beer company says you should drink my beer because, you know, the foam is bigger. Another says, no, you should drink my beer because it's cheaper. So everyone's engaged in argument. And everyone's arguing, and there are many different references and authorities to support their points. But ultimately, whatever we want to choose, which to accept, we have to choose some example. Someone who's, we think, is further along the path than we are, and we have to find out from them what the arguments, what the authorities, what the different reference, the scriptures mean, or the authorized books, what they mean, and then we can understand how he got or how she got to wherever they're at. In other words, we have to choose someone. The demons, they may choose Ravana, that he's further on that path than they are. People are into rock music, they may choose the Rolling Stones or the Beatles. They choose someone as the authority because they want to get to a certain place, and they see that someone is further on the path than they are, and according to how they can explain and how they can encourage others to get to that path, they become a Mahajan. So similarly in devotional life, we have to understand what devotional service is to a certain degree, and then we have to choose someone or some ones because they're further on the path than we are. And if we follow their instructions and their example, then we can get to the same place that they're at. If we understand what they have to say and we follow their example, then we can get to the same place that they're at. So that's called Mahajan. There can be many Mahajans. Krishna ultimately says, Mahatmanas tumam satatam kirtanantam mam itantas chadrida vritaha namasyantas tumam bhaktya nityukta upasate. Chanting my glories, engaging in devotional service with determination, bowing down before me with humility, such great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So Krishna describes such souls as Mahatmas. Therefore, someone may be more or less a Mahatma, and we have to use our intelligence to see how much they're a Mahatma. We could use our intelligence to find out how much they're not a Mahatma, but that won't do us very much good to find out how we can become a Mahatma. it may. We should use our intelligence also to find out how much people are not absorbed in devotional service. But that should not be our emphasis. Our emphasis should be in seeing how much they are so we can figure out how much we can follow in their footsteps and come to a higher platform of devotional service. So both have to be there. Both are discrimination. But the emphasis should be on we ourselves personally advancing in devotional service by appreciation of their good qualities and of their good instructions rather than trying to figure out how they went wrong. Solely. We should find out how people are going wrong so we don't do the same thing that they're doing. Doing the same thing wrong. But ultimately we should, we'll do the right thing if we appreciate what they're doing right. So this is a long topic and we don't really have a whole lot of time. To follow the devotees in proportion to their doing the right thing. So Rupa Goswami says, Manmana Bhava Madbhakto. He doesn't say that. He says, Krishneti yasa giritam manasedriyeta dikshasti chet pranativis chabajantam isham shushu shaya chabajanam ananya nanya nindati sunyaridayam isita sangalabdhya. That one should mentally follow, one should mentally honor the devotees who chant the holy name. One should cooperate with and offer obeisances to the devotees who have undergone spiritual initiation and engage in worshiping the deities. And one should faithfully serve that unalloyed devotee who's engaged in unalloyed devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So there are different levels of devotees, and we have to be able to judge which level each devotee is on. We actually have to develop that discrimination, but not with the idea of developing false ego or becoming offensive. But it's everyone's first duty in devotional life is to figure out intellectually and practically who's on what level, because the life of devotional service depends upon that. Devotional service means to exchange six loving exchanges amongst the devotees, offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind and confidence, inquiring confidentially, offering prasad and accepting prasad. These are the six symptoms of love exchanged by the devotees. So this is what nourishes devotional service. So we have to engage in these six processes, which are all-encompassing if we examine them. And we have to engage them with devotees in accordance with the devotees' level of advancement. That if we improperly engage with a devotee inappropriately, that is, if we act to a neophyte as if he's very advanced, or act to an advanced devotee as if he's a neophyte, then the result is we become offensive and our devotional service will become impeded. It's called Vaishnava Parad. To accept, for instance, generally the karmis are people who accept an ordinary person as God, and they accept God as an ordinary person. So similarly, if we accept an extraordinary devotee as ordinary, and an ordinary devotee as extraordinary, then we may find ourselves in difficulty. So our first business in devotional service is understanding to what degree someone is engaged in devotional service, and then to reciprocate with them accordingly with the six loving exchanges. And then we should also, secondarily, we should find out what level I'm at. Because then I'll know what level to expect of devotional service to receive myself. And I won't imitate a higher devotee. Prabhupada writes before that, previously to that, that the Bhagavad Gita, there are many instructions by Krishna. But to accept Krishna consciousness, the Bhagavad Gita with faith means to accept all the instructions, not just the ones we like. That's called Shraddha. And as far as then Krishna, then Prabhupada writes in the purport. Oh, we have the purport here. When a person realizes himself to be an eternal servant, servitor of Krishna, he loses interest in everything but Krishna's service, always thinking of Krishna, devising means by which to spread the holy name of Krishna. He understands that his only business is in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Such a person is to be recognized as an Uttama Adhikari, and his association should be immediately accepted according to the six processes. Indeed, the advanced Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava devotee should be accepted as a spiritual master. Everything one possesses should be offered to him, for his enjoying that one should deliver whatever he has to the spiritual master. The brahmachari in particular is supposed to beg alms from others and offer them to the spiritual master. However, one should not imitate the behavior of an advanced devotee or Mahabhagavat without being self-realized, for by such imitation one will eventually become degraded. So, in other words, one should understand what level he's at so he doesn't imitate a higher level. Generally, we imitate higher levels. We don't usually imitate lower levels. And then Prabhupada writes that one can understand an Uttama Adhikari Vaishnav, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakura, by his ability to make others into Vaishnavas. So, of course, there's always been a contentious point within our society that what you do is you count the number of people you initiate and you claim, bingo. Uttama Adhikari, just count them, folks. But that's not, to the undiscerning eye of someone who doesn't, the lazy devotee, who doesn't really want to understand things very clearly, that's a good way of figuring out who to take, for instance, in our society, who to take initiation from. You just count them. And the person who has the most, he must be the best. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending how you want to look at it, from our experience within our recent years, it doesn't work that way. Suddenly, the person who had the most, he winds up, you know, doing something which is he's not supposed to do, and everyone decides that he was a demon all the time anyhow. Just a clever demon in the disguise of a devotee, and therefore everyone was fooled. Which is not really true, of course. It just means that people, they decided, a lot of people, at least one reason, they decided not to really understand very carefully what he was saying or what he was doing. They just decided that he has the most disciples and we just follow him because he's the greatest. And in one sense, that's true. That's one of the criteria, that if someone is enthusing people and engaged in devotional service somehow or another, then that's one of the criteria of being authorized, but it's not the only one. It may not wind up to be the most long-lasting and steady way that people are engaged in devotional service, especially if they go off, so to speak. So, both criteria have to be there. To understand who's actually an Uttama Adhikari, we have to look at the quality of the devotees, not only the quantity. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he only had one disciple, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, but because of the quality of his disciple, we can understand the quality of the teacher. So it's not only quantity, it's also quality, because ultimately when we're talking about Vaishnava, we're talking about quality. There may be many Vaishnava priyas, or almost Vaishnavas, and to get a lot of almost Vaishnavas doesn't really require very much depth of devotional service. They're almost Vaishnavas, they're aspiring Vaishnavas, but they're actually on the material platform, and therefore you can attract them with material means, called charisma, whatever you want to call it. So that can be attract, but it's superficial. Ultimately, we have to see how many Vaishnavas, how many are actually being made by the person. And that's more than just quantity, it's also quality has to be considered. How much he's able to infuse actual devotional understanding within the hearts of his followers, and how much they're actually inspired to actually surrender things, engage them in Krishna service, rather than their false ego service. And then Prabhupada says that a neophyte devotee, or a second class devotee, Madhyama Adhikari, he can also become a spiritual master. But it should be understood, but he should only engage people who are on the same level that he's at, or on a low level. But it should be understood that they can't become is we understood that they cannot advance very well toward the ultimate goal of life under his insufficient guidance. Therefore, a disciple should be careful to accept an Uttama Adhikari as a spiritual master. Very mysterious passage. But the point is that we have to get complete guidance, somehow or another. Now, many people, for different reasons, they become very enthusiastic, and probably, you know, rightly so or wrongly so, about that we should follow a certain person. But actually, the real crux of the matter is that we should understand ourselves personally what the process is by submission and inquiry, and then we should follow what we've understood to the degree of our understanding. And then the result should be we should get the what's described in the devotional scriptures as the results of devotional service. For instance, mainly detachment from material things, attachment to everything in relation to Krishna, and a growing happiness in devotional service. That should be the result. Detachment, awakening of love of God, and growing understanding about how everything is related to God. So we love everything in relation to Krishna. So we should try to understand in that way and not in some more sentimental way. But anyway, it's a long topic. So I'll stop there. Maybe there's some question.
What did I buy?
Well, I always took shelter in the fact that the problem is an adhikari, and whoever can help me to follow his instructions, and it's like a perfect arrangement.
Why did you have that understanding?
Pardon me?
Why did you have that understanding?
Because we may not know there's an ultimate adhikari immediately anymore.
Well, how do you know the problem is an ultimate adhikari?
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
What's that? Why do you have no doubt?
Well, then the
okay, well, that's true. Because we can see from Prabhupada's practical activities. Just like if we assimilate the knowledge, we'll figure out at the end of Bhagavad Gita that Krishna, he actually wants to deliver the conditioned souls. That in other words, if we're all actually Krishna's servant, and Krishna is all merciful, then the reason why he created the material world is not to watch us suffer. But he actually wants to deliver all conditioned souls. That's reasonable, isn't it? If he's all compassionate and we're all suffering, then he must want to deliver us. So someone who actually practically delivers many people to the platform of devotional service, he must be very dear to Krishna. He must be quite empowered by Krishna. So that way we can understand Prabhupada, that he actually fulfilled the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he didn't really do anything besides that. He really didn't teach us economic development and sense gratification. He simply taught devotional service, both practically by his instructions and by his experience, by his practical example. And he did it in such a way as to actually engage others without compromising. So we can accept that Prabhupada must have been, according to the definitions in the scriptures, on the highest platform. And therefore, someone who follows in the degree that we follow his footsteps and preach the same thing, then we can understand that we're serving the Uttama Adhikari. So then the example is that someone may not be an expert electrician, but at least if he follows the instructions of an expert electrician, he becomes as good as an expert electrician. Just like, for instance, someone may be a very expert electrician, but if he doesn't follow the example of the most expert electrician, then he can't be as expert as someone who's not as good as he is, but at least he's following the instructions of the person who's most expert. So the expert electrician says, put the nail this way, screw the screw this way, press this button, whatever. And if he does it, then he's as good as the expert electrician, if that's all he does. So, if Prabhupada was the best, one who follows his example, he may not be able to claim that he automatically becomes as good as Prabhupada, but at least he does what Prabhupada wants, and therefore one will get the same result as if Prabhupada was personally present. He's giving the best instructions he can. If he's giving the instructions, he's understood from Prabhupada. Is that clear? Anything else? Okay, Mother.
My mind actually that it's very difficult to make discrimination when we start with the spiritual life, just we are completely inexperienced, what does it mean spiritual life, and then we want to make discrimination who is on which level. It takes some time that we actually have more knowledge in spiritual life and also realizations that we are able to do that. And also I find it's a little bit even maybe dangerous in the beginning. We made such kind of discrimination, these devotees, my grandma, this is just Kanishka, I don't know, his association, because we had some, I saw some examples, some young devotees who just came and they thought that they know everything, who is on which platform, and are just not associated with Kanishka, the Karis, and actually mostly everybody is Kanishka, the Karis. So you can explain that.
Well, it's our job to discriminate. In the beginning, we'll probably do the wrong discrimination. But after figuring out where everyone else is at, then I should figure out where I'm at. And if I think at the beginning I'm an Uttama Adhikari, that I have a perfect vision, then I'm wrong. So the conclusion should be that I'm a Kanishtha Adhikari, and although I'm discriminating to the best of my ability, I'm probably wrong. I may not be completely correct. Therefore, one should be a little humble about their discrimination. In any case, all the discrimination is positive. I should respect everyone within the mind who's engaged in devotional service, although I may not intimately associate with them. I should cooperate with all those who are actually following the instructions of the spiritual master, for instance, of Prabhupada. And I should faithfully serve more advanced devotees than myself, who are more, who have more appreciation and more, dedication to the mission.
And I suppose also motivation, because we see that if devotees didn't have right or pure motivation, for example, in accepting spiritual master, then as you said, if we accept spiritual master according to the number of disciples which he has, then probably our motivation is wrong.
Certainly incomplete. Whatever our knowledge is incomplete, whether that's due to our motivation or our ignorance or whatever.
Yeah, but then what is the chance for the devotee in the beginning? Because he has no experience, he has no sense of discrimination.
What if we learn the philosophy? If we remain on the sentimental platform, we'll get into trouble.
So it takes some time, actually.
Because even, for instance, in our society, or in other societies, you get initiated. Then we think, my job is done. Well, if you think like that, then you're finished. Now I don't have to discriminate anymore. I found the true Uttama Adhikari. The only thing I do is have to become a fanatic, and then my life becomes perfect. No, the actual purport is that under his guidance, or their guidance, that I should learn how to discriminate better. And that discrimination, for instance, Prabhupada doesn't write, your Diksha Guru, you should engage in the 6 loving exchanges. No, we should engage in the 6 loving exchanges with any devotee. All the devotees according to their level. So if I actually have my instructors, because ultimately I have to take instruction, it's not just a formality of initiation, although some obligation of surrender may be there with initiation, but that surrender is surrender to the instructions of Krishna. So ultimately I have to understand things in relation to the philosophy and then apply it practically in my devotional life. And that means I have to, and everyone who can help me understand things better, they become my spiritual master. And how to apply it practically, they become my gurus. So it's not that it stops at initiation. Now I can offend everyone else, my guru will protect me. Then I'm a fool. Then I won't make any progress whatsoever. But now initiation means I've develop the mood of surrender, and under the guidance of my spiritual master, I should be able to discriminate better who my gurus are, who all my other gurus are, and how to serve them appropriately. But if I choose someone as my guide, and he, instead of teaching me that, he keeps me on the neophyte platform, then I won't make any progress. That's what Prabhupada says here. Therefore, those who are acting as guides, they should also understand their limitations and not try to, and try to give guidance accordingly.
The point she was making, how when you invite devotees, you can't choose, like, isn't that then also the responsibility of the older devotees to also say, well, he's bona fide? Because, like I know in Benelux, we choose one guru, and all of the persons who knew that he wasn't changing his 16 rounds, still he was chosen to be a guru, and then later he fell down. But there were many younger devotees who thought he was very nice. But some of the older devotees knew he wasn't qualified, but still nobody said anything because that's not the etiquette. And the younger devotees, they go into a mess.
Who decides what the etiquette? Where is it? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I can't, if somebody comes to me, I want to take this person as a guru, I'm not going to say to him, well, he's not changing his rounds, or he's not qualified, because it's his decision.
How do you make the decision?
Well, according to numbers, because isn't
are you supposed to chant 16 rounds?
Yes.
Did he think he was chanting 16 rounds?
I suppose he did, seems like it.
So that
he was
but if he knew he wasn't chanting 16, just like if someone says, well, I think I'm going to go around the corner and cross the street. But if you know that around the corner, that there is simply, there's a drop, and that the person's going to fall off the edge of the cliff and get killed. So you say, well, I don't really want to disappoint the person. So you just say, well, that's a good idea. Because I don't want to be negative about what he wants to do, disappoint him. So he says, yeah, sure, go ahead, no problem. He walks around the corner, falls off the cliff, and he goes, you know, he breaks his neck and goes, well, why didn't you tell me? Well, I didn't really want to be, you know, I wanted to be positive about the whole thing. I didn't want to disappoint you.
There seems to still be an unrighteous bill. There are some rules in this world who still not of these standards.
Yeah, so if someone comes to you and says that I want to take initiation, what do you say? Well, you know, it's your decision.
Well, I usually say, see if he has a good sadhana. First see it for yourself before you come to that decision.
Yeah.
But usually they don't have that chance because their guru is on the other side of the world most of the time.
So that's not a very practical instruction then. How are they going to do it? Get a satellite? Good idea, you know, how hire a satellite and watch him over remote control. And there he goes, Guru Maharaj. He got his hands in the bead bag. Go ahead, go for it. How is he going to know? If you know something, of course, how we express it, according to our present structure of our society, the authority system, the reality. What do they call it? I forget what they call it. The real politic or something. The real ISKCON society. It may take some intelligence, some subtlety of trying to figure out how to do it in such a way as not to get implicated. As we say, this particular guru, he's not chanting his rounds. And then it gets back to his other disciples and they say, well, he's an offender. He's envious. He never liked us. He never liked my guru anyhow. That's why he's saying it. Don't listen to him, you know. So then it comes, then we're afraid that it's going to come back to me. We're not so much concerned whether it's true or not, what I have to say. We're afraid that even if I tell the truth, I'll get into trouble. Matter of fact, I'm more likely to get into trouble if I tell the truth than if I don't. If later on, it's, you know, a person finds out that something went wrong, we just blame it on the institution. Well, they told me it's not the etiquette to tell the truth. We have a society where the etiquette is to tell, you know, it's not to be truthful. We're trying to deliver the highest truth, but the little truths, like who to take initiation from, we're not allowed to deliver those truths. Well, it is a fact, because that's the way our social system works. Because, generally speaking, we have, you know, we're a society of people who are more sentimental than they are philosophical. So the fact is that someone may not even chant their rounds, and they may not even come to the program very often, and they may put on a great show of devotional service, and they may be really sincere about it. They actually may be sincere about trying to spread Krishna consciousness to their understanding, and they may even think themselves to be the center, that everything depends on them. that they themselves are the personification of Krishna consciousness, and therefore they don't have time to chant their rounds or come to the program because they're too busy distributing themselves to everyone, which is the real way of saving everyone. So they may be sincere about that, and they may be very expert at distributing themselves in such a way as that people become attracted. They may even chant their rounds because this person's inspiring them. So there may be some validity to it, and therefore it becomes complicated. Not that the guy's actually a demon in disguise, so I got to warn him. Don't do it. He's a demon in disguise. You know, I saw him underneath the sikha. There were some, you know, two little horns. So he may be actually sincere about what he's doing, but it may be the wrong thing ultimately. The wrong thing ultimately in the sense that it may not be very beneficial for the devotee in the long run. If that's his, you know, for one reason or another. More, he may get the benefit in the short run. It may be more subtle and complicated. So when you deal with subtleties, a subtle situation where it's complex, it's not simply black and white, it's simply not devotional or non-devotional, then one also has to be a little subtle in his presentation to have the proper effect. To be able to properly direct the person towards proper guidance and at the same time not be offensive. Not to destroy the inspiration they have, but to give them the proper inspiration, to encourage their inspiration they have, but to direct them in a positive way so that their inspiration can increase even more or be steady. So even if after some time the person falls down, then my preaching shouldn't be, "I told you so." That's usually our immediate reaction, is that I was right all along. I knew it within my heart the guy was going to fall down, but I just couldn't tell you because the institution, then we blame it on the institution, the etiquette in our institution is that we're not supposed to tell the truth. And then the person becomes convinced, yeah, this institution is a society of demons, you know. Non-devotees, actually, in the core of their heart, they're encouraged to lie to me. And now they want me to take shelter of someone else, and I'll probably get the same thing. I'll never really find out if this person's really honest and sincere either, because, you know, the whole institution is based on lies. But the real fact is that the institution is based upon people with incomplete understanding of how to do things properly. Are not telling someone not to, that someone is not chanting, in the positive sense, is not based upon the fact that it's the etiquette not to tell the truth. It's the etiquette not to discourage people if they have inspiration. That's the real etiquette. So if I have enough intelligence to how to keep their inspiration at the same time properly direct them towards guidance which may be more steady or more stable, well, that will be a superior way of directing them. And if I don't have that intelligence, then I should try to find out from others who do how to do it. So the person can get proper guidance and keep his inspiration for whatever finding in that particular devotee, but find out someone who's probably more steady in their devotional service so his inspiration can be maintained over a long period of time. Is that clear? Yes.
Is it a duty of GVC to see that the guru is serving proper
service? Yeah, that's the main duty of the GVC. But we're working in a society where that's their duty, but it's not an easy duty. I personally have experience like that. Because you have to be quite advanced. You actually have to get the mercy of Krishna. But by trying to do it, maybe we'll get some more mercy. Krishna will help us. But as soon as you look the wrong way, because you have fanatic devotees, for instance, you have fanatic devotees, if you say the wrong thing about their guru, their hearts are immediately struck. If you write one line, one letter, one period is in the wrong place about their guru, then you're a demon. And their only job is somehow or another to get rid of you. So it takes quite a bit of expertise how to deal in that circumstance. So even the GBC, you know, that's their duty, but how to do it properly is not so easy sometimes. But they should become better at it. Yes.
So I'd like to ask a question in relation to what you mentioned in the beginning of the class.
So I read once an article of Jayavedra Maharaj. He wrote that Krishna consciousness is an axiomatic truth. Could you say something?
That's too vague. It's too general for me.
Axiomatic truth?
Yeah, but it's too general, especially in relation to this class. I don't really know what you mean.
In the beginning, you were asking us now, what is authority? How can we judge who is bona fide?
Krishna consciousness is as clear as the day. Just like Prabhupada once wrote to me, if you light a match in a dark room, the darkness can't put the match out. So Krishna consciousness is ultimately very direct and simple. It's simple for the simple. But because we're not so simple, it seems very complex. But for one who's actually on the platform of realization, it's very clear. Prabhupada says it's the self-realized soul who's actually... I'll get the right, the exact... One may be bewildered by apparent contradictions. See, there's in Yuktahara, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma, Kutastha Vijitendriha, Yukti Chite Yogi, Samalos Trasvakanshanaha. A Krishna conscious. This Bhagavad Gita is the science of Krishna consciousness. No one can become Krishna conscious simply by mundane scholarship. One must be fortunate enough to associate with a person who is in pure consciousness. A Krishna conscious person has realized knowledge by the grace of Krishna because he is satisfied with pure devotional service. By realized knowledge, one becomes perfect. By transcendental knowledge, one can remain steady in his convictions. But by mere academic knowledge, one can be easily deluded and confused by apparent contradictions. It is a realized soul who is actually self-controlled because he is surrendered to Krishna. He is transcendental because he has nothing to do with mundane scholarship. For him, mundane scholarship and mental speculation, which may be as good as gold to others, are of no greater value than pebbles or stones.
What is
this? So Bhagavad Gita 6:8, the purport. So one who is actually surrendered to Krishna, everything is clear, and to the degree that we're not, we may be confused by apparent contradictions. Just like I was discussing yesterday with when we were walking, that in the fifth canto there are so many things about where the sun is, where the moon is, but these things are actually not very important for the devotees, because these are meant for more or less materialistic people to give them some understanding. But for the devotee, whether the sun is next door or the sun is, you know, wherever it is, still I have to serve Krishna. Wherever the sun and moon is, it makes no difference in my life, ultimately. Whether they went to the moon or not has no real value, you know, makes no difference. I just have to serve Krishna. So one has such an understanding that he's fixed. He's not disturbed by these apparent contradictions. And one who doesn't, who wants to find some excuse why not to serve Krishna, all these things disturb him. We'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.